Hello and welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today we're going to talk about flood control, water, hydrology, all kinds of water issues. And to help us do that, we have three distinguished experts in the area. Imad Habib came to UL in 2003. He is a professor of civil engineering, and he's also director of the Louisiana Watershed Flood Center. He has a PhD in civil engineering with a concentration in hydrology. Also joined by Ms. Monique Boulay, who is the CEO of the Acadiana Planning Commission. She's been doing that for about 2 years. Before that, she was in the private industry and has an executive MBA from here at UL Lafayette. Finally, Dr. Robert Miller, who is an assistant professor of civil engineering. He's been here since 2017. He's also assistant director of the Louisiana Watershed Flood Center, which we'll talk about. He has a PhD in applied mathematics. So, welcome to the show. You are all the experts, so I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Everybody who lives in Greater Acadiana probably knows the importance of water and floods. And if we didn't know that, we certainly knew that after the floods of 2016. So has the time come for watershed and water management? Is that why the Louisiana Watershed Flood Center has arisen? What steps in terms of planning and the commission and the water, you know, are being taken to address water issues? Can we start with you, Imad?
Sure, yeah. Okay. So I think, like you said, water is really a big theme in Louisiana. Our lives and our resources all revolve around water. And the flood of 2016 kind of brought a big message to the community that we need to do something beyond reacting to these floods. And the center, the Louisiana Watershed Flood Center, was established with that. Mindset that we need to build capacity into the community to be able to prepare and, get away from the reaction mode that we typically do in front of these storms. So we look at the center as an attempt to build capacity at the university and integrate with the communities, including public, citizens and governments and all different stakeholders, and provide the resources that can help them and help the community come together in preparation of these storms.
When you say build capacity, I'm not sure that I know what that means. What does that mean?
So probably over 50 years ago, the federal government funded water shed maintenance in our state, and it was done well. They maintained the waterways, and they kept up a lot of data. Well, eventually that got cut with budget cuts and passed down to the state, and then the state's budget got cut, and it really went away. We haven't done a whole lot of maintenance, and so today we elect mayors, and we say, fix our drainage, and you have about 2 years to do it before we get unhappy. And they hire an engineer and say, tell me the best way to fix the drainage problem. Well, the problem might be in the neighboring municipality or even the neighboring parish, and they have no legal authority or capacity to do anything about it. And so if we don't have – that's one of the biggest things we're trying to do here is build capacity at the local level from a watershed perspective so we can look at systematic issues together. We can bring our governments together, and that happened in our process in the past year with the $25 million that the governor gave the region. I was pulled in on a call with Iberia Parish, Vermilion Parish, and Youngsville, and their three engineering firms. And together there was a real brainstorm of how to do this. Well, we still and when I say build – when we say build capacity, we still don't have system-wide science modeling to understand the full impacts of whatever we do. And it's not new science. We don't need a lot of research. It's a well-established science. Both of these guys are very well-versed in it and are experts. We just have never stopped and invested in it so that we know if we do this project, this is the impact it's going to have downstream or upstream. We're not going to do this project in this parish and drown the next parish. And our leaders are really working together. That opens a lot of doors for us. There are other parts of the state, the front page of the paper today, there's one parish suing another to stop a project in the Baton Rouge region. We are beyond that because our leaders are at the table and they understand the implications. And so it's really just investing in the science that we need to really be able to make better decisions.
You know, you said something that struck me, and I'm talking to Robert Miller here. You said something in an article. You said, my drainage affects your drainage. Mm-hmm. And I think what Ms. Bollet just said, you know, says that we're all connected somehow. So is was that part of the issue that came up with the floods in 2016 that we understood for first time that we really our problems were region-wide? And secondly, what kind of data do you get? You're kind of a data person, so uh-huh. when you say we need more data, what kind of data are we talking about?
Well, I think the to address your first question, yes, we are all connected, and the fact that we're so flat, you know, you can think about someone throwing a rock in a flat pool. Well, the waves ripple out in all directions, and so basically that's how I think about our system here is that you do one thing on one side, it affects somewhere totally different, and so that's going to be true across the board. And that makes it challenging in terms of data. You have to cover the whole space. You have to have primarily measurements on water level, water stages, how high is the water going to get in different areas, and you have to have that across the system. Another thing is measuring how fast the water is moving, so the flows, how much water is coming in and out. Some areas are affected by tides. And, for example, when you go further south, you have tidal influence. And then when you go in the northern portions, you have just runoff from urban and agricultural areas. And so in between, you have structures and controls that manipulate how water flows. And so you have to capture all of that. So that's, I think, what we mean. And I don't want to forget rainfall, measurements of rainfall across the watershed. So
this definitely sounds like big data. It sounds like a lot of data. Emma?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment back on the capacity building aspects too, like Monique mentioned, you know, building models and data and so forth. But, you know, it's also, you can think of it as a capacity building in the human, you know, dimension. So, and that's something we would like to, you know, contribute to as far as the university by building, you know, a stronger future generation of scientists and engineers who can actually tackle these types of problems, you know, and hopefully those engineers and scientists and social scientists and all sorts of people who can actually address flood problems can help the community by being employed by the local governments or the engineering firms. And, you know, so we need to build the capacities from the bottom up and you know, follow the footsteps of other states, actually, that have done that over the years. And it kind of paid off for them, you know, when they are confronted with these massive disasters and how to handle them.
Do most states do what we do, which is just wait until there's a disaster before they think about doing anything?
Some do, and some have planning efforts. And so it's a challenging problem, you know. And Louisiana has its own challenges in terms of how the water moves. You know, we have a complicated system, like Robert was saying, about the tidal and
sounds incredibly complicated. I mean, the things that you're talking about, water level stages, so you got to be able to determine if you get like a big rain in Baton Rouge, how that'll spread out through the Atchafalaya or through the tributary. I mean, it just seems like, how do you keep track of all that and who does that? Is that part of what you guys are all about?
Computers.
Computers. Nice.
I wanted to touch on one of your questions. You know, we are also engaging pretty intensely with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Okay.
They are charged.
Aren't they the villains in all this? Because that's what I hear some of the time.
Well, you know, not necessarily. I mean, what we suffered in 2016 was a rainfall that it was like somebody just turned on a faucet and forgot to turn it off. And so it wasn't really our river's fault. It was, I mean, it was the enormity of the water that came in. But one of the differences of our recovery is that we're looking at this from a watershed perspective, which seems very simple. I don't have any H&H expertise, but I can tell you if we don't look at it from a watershed perspective, it's not going to work. And so working with the Corps, I've been on in several of their meetings with their Mississippi River Commission, which is experts from all over the country, and they tell us, keep moving. Nobody is doing this up and down the Mississippi River. Nobody is looking at it from a watershed perspective. And that's, I know you, I mean, you know, it seems almost commonsensical, but our government structures are not set up to do that. they're set up to deal with the problems within their jurisdiction. And I mean the old cliche, which it pains me to even repeat, but water knows no political boundaries.
The governments themselves are siloed. So in other words,
right.
the big flood in Scott becomes Lafayette's problem, you know, so to speak. But they're two different kind of government entities there. Tell me about the $25 million. That was a grant from the
– Well, so after a natural disaster, the FEMA – it actually comes from FEMA through the Governor's Office of Homeland Security – will give out mitigation dollars to every parish affected. And they did in this last flood. But what the parish presidents of Acadiana did – and that's – they make up my board of trustees – they went to the governor and said, would you give us one pot? Often these dollars can be used to deal with a repetitive home, to do a property buyout. A lot of parishes don't get very much, maybe a million and a half. So you can't really make any game-changing moves. Well, so the parish president said, give us one pot and let us make the priority drainage. And with that, we got a $25 million pot. And we went into a very technical vetting process. And that's where these guys, Iman and Robert, really did step in and help the governments to look at these projects. We set criteria as a region. We brought in technical people from every parish. And we set up a whole selection process of projects. And we got around $100 million of projects. And we identified $25 million that we want funded and another $10 million that we're also asking them to fill out the applications, because when other parts of the state can't spend their money, the governor has to do something with it. So we want to be in line, ready. And I think we will have most of those initial projects funded and then go for the next pot.
Can you tell me offhand what some of those projects might be, like the ones that came to my mind was dredging, the Vermilion, is that?
Well, so that one really is a core project.
Okay.
They have control over the river, and that one is much more than $25
million. Oh, really? Okay.
That is a project, though, that has to be considered when we look at regional solutions. It can't be separate. And we had conversations with the Corps on Friday, actually, because that Colonel Clancy at our last meeting brought that up as a potential project. And so the question is – everyone in Lafayette wants it. Everybody in Vermilion is very nervous about it because it will make the water flow faster. And so he said very clearly, we will work with the Acadiana Planning Commission, and it will be a regional project. We won't just dredge in one parish or the other. We will find a solution for the entire river, which is really what we want.
But, excuse me, that would be rivers, right, wouldn't it? Because there
would.
Are a few rivers.
Well, that particular project – I guess they were
talking
about
in the Acadiana planning region. There
right.
are
so when
Chickfa, Tangipahoa, Ami, Tacomi, the Bayou Manchac, the Mermentau, the Vermilion.
So we claim the Vermilion, the Teche, and the Mermentau.
Right.
Vermilion, Teche, and Mermentau.
Right. Correct.
Okay.
The other ones are in our neighboring parish, and those watersheds. Certainly, the Vermilion and the Teche share watersheds, and the Mermentau has impacts. Pretty severe impacts throughout our region as well.
Wow. We are talking today with Imad Habib, Monique Boulay, and Robert Miller about flood control and hydrology in Acadiana. We're going to take a short break and talk some more when we come back.
Have you ever heard a story that changed the way you saw the world?
I had witnessed the terrifying joy of unbearable responsibility.
We fight for identity. Sometimes we kill for identity. But why is that?
I can't let my life be this. Because if I give up right now, that's what my life will be.
I'm Guy Raz. Join me each week for inspiring stories on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Coming up Wednesday night at 8 here on KRVS.
I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. NPR's Morning Edition brings you the news when you get up in the morning.
You hear reports from around the world.
You get the story straight with in-depth reporting and news you don't hear anywhere else.
That's what we've always done and what we'll always do.
Very simply, it's the news on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings from 7 to 9 on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Welcome back. I'm Pearson Cross, your host. We're joined by Imad Habib, Monique Boulay, and Robert Miller, all to talk about hydrology, flood control in Acadiana, and the Louisiana Watershed Flood Center recently put together. Dr. Miller, you were talking about gathering data, and I was just curious, in terms from a technical standpoint, how do you get data on flows of water? How do you get data on water levels all over at different points of a river? How do you keep? Is there, from a technological standpoint, is there something new there, or is it time tested methods, or how's it all work?
Well, it's basically an application of things that we already – it's been tested. We have the sensors. One of the big initiatives in what we're doing here is the regional gauge network, which is a part of the $25 million that's going to address these issues kind of on a watershed scale. And, it's basically utilizing – now that the sensors have become so advanced, now you have what's so-called smart sensors where you don't even have to put it in the water. You can actually mount it to a bridge, and it can collect the information and send it back so that you can see real-time what's going on. And I really think that that's the sort of information that we need in this region, both from a planning standpoint but also emergency preparedness, even just the average person knowing that, hey, you know, eventually we would like to be able to say, hey, if this street might be underwater, or maybe I can't have access. So just kind of having at your fingertips that kind of real-time information, like a pulse on the system.
But then you're going to have probably a software that will crunch everything as it comes in and give you a picture of what's going on. Is that right? And then are you equipped to kind of respond or to point out dangers or like alert people in a neighborhood, or is that kind of down the road? Because I think when I remember the flood of 2016 in my neighborhood, nobody thought it was going to flood. And then overnight at about 4, 5, 6 in the morning, the water started to rise. And I think caught a lot of people by surprise. Mm-hmm. Would your system up and running have some sort of advance warning in that capability?
I guess part of the Gauge project, also following on what Robert said, is putting this web interface that can actually digest all the data that comes from the gauges. We're talking about hundreds of gauges, actually, like a couple hundred, 200, 300 gauges to cover the region. So you would need an automated data telemetry system that transmits the data to a website, a platform with visualization capabilities, so that citizens, like you were saying, during the storm and ahead of the storm can go there and see what the conditions are. And I think part of the project also that we're building, you know, what we call like a smart data, you know, analysis, where when you look at the gauges closest to your neighborhood, you can tell, actually the system can tell you which other sensors or which other locations that are relevant to you. So this way you can get a bigger picture instead of just one particular location.
Now, that might be a picture for experts, but what about a picture for people? I know there's a website called maptracks.com, something like that. I'm just thinking, so we have a rain event here in Lafayette. You're worried about your neighborhood. You get online, and can you see where the water is or what's likely to happen? Will we be able to get to that point?
Yes, we definitely, within this project, we'll have near or real-time data. And near would be what, Imad? A couple of minutes, potentially.
Yes, I mean the data should actually be in real time. It's a matter of transmission.
Yeah. And you know, we went through a lot of outreach over mm-hmm. the last year, I guess. And in one of the meetings, you know, somebody got up and some people didn't understand what we were saying, and he put it in real simple terms. He said, when we go to the camp, we check a gauge at a certain point on this bridge, and we know if it's here, we have 24 hours to get the trucks out. And so from the public perspective, yeah, we definitely want to provide that web interface and then some alert systems so that if certain areas need to be evacuated, you know, sooner rather than later, it will give our officials that capacity.
Now, that's one kind of capacity. Another kind of capacity would be the capacity to foresee problems that are, you know, emerging or going to happen. Now, some of those are affected by sprawl, by roads, mm-hmm. by, you know, increasing urbanization, all those things. The kind of work that you guys are thinking about doing or planning right now, are you going to have some suggestions with regard to building, with regard to creating air, you know, those kind of issues?
Yeah. We've already brought some of the developers into the conversation. We have to land there. We have to land at how are we building it. And if you look at the development over the last 15 years, that's really, you know, Youngsville used to drain Lafayette. but it was fields, and so it didn't mess anything up. And we've developed really fast, not just Acadiana, not just Lafayette, not just Youngsville. It's happened all over the state. That's where we had large issues. But looking at pervious versus impervious surfaces, looking at new ways, there's in New Orleans, they're starting to look at an retro-inverted road so that the roads veer a little bit inward with a pervious strip. Rather than pushing the water to the structures, it pushes the water hopefully down into the ground. Techniques like that, I think there's a lot of new development in green infrastructure. And so how we build, where we build, absolutely is the end of this not the end of the conversation, but it's where this conversation leads us and takes us if we're going to have any kind of sustainability.
Well, I think, you know, urbanization and development is a big theme here. And, you know, from a flooding perspective, a lot of these storms that we witnessed recently, the 2016, if you look back at the last 100 years, there were quite a few of these storms, actually.
1940 is the big one, right? 1940
and mm-hmm. several, actually, in the 80s in Baton Rouge and 90-something. And so it's just the impact become a lot more pronounced because of, you know, how we build our communities. So and I think this is one of the things that a model, you know, can actually test and tell us a little bit more information about how we can build and where we need to change our development practices and so forth.
Yeah. Are other communities doing this? You said we're the only ones up and down the Mississippi River.
Looking at it from a watershed perspective, have the governments coming together to work together. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of people looking at water problems, but pulling the government structures together to really collaborate, it does seem simple, but
well, it's hard. It works against a bunch of different cycles, you know, and also the election cycle. So who gets elected on it and whose responsibility is it and all those kinds of things.
And we actually have four new board members this year. So four people brand new to this, and they are all – I think when you engage at a high level like this, they've all embraced it. And, so, you know, Chester Cedars in St. Martin has taken a leadership role. Troy Wayman is new with One Acadiana. They have a spot on our board. They passed a resolution of support of both the Gage project and the modeling that we want to do. So it's – we really do have Kevin Segrera from Vermilion is also taking a role in this. He's new. And Ryan Williams from Evangeline. So four brand new leaders in this, and they are just as engaged as the ones that were there before them. So – yeah, we do have something special in Acadiana with our leadership, and I think it will pay off in the future. The governor's office, you know, we had our board meeting there Tuesday in his office, and
which is an indication that he's focused on this issue as well.
And
right?
He signed an executive order to try to do this across the state.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and Guy Cormier really was kind of one of the people that got this kicked off with
that's
those
Saint
early
Martin,
conversations.
Parish president.
He was. Mm-hmm. He's now with the Louisiana Police
Jury
Association.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me this. Let me jump in for a second. The Louisiana Watershed Flood Center is a fairly new center, right? Are you up and running yet? Do you have projects in mind? Are you fully staffed? Where are you at?
Well, yes, we started officially, you know, this early this semester. And like I said, it came as a response to needs by the community, I think. And we are trying to build this from bottom up, really. So we are trying to connect with stakeholders and interested parties and build the projects from there. We already have a few initiatives that we're working on. I think the Gage project and supporting the modeling effort for the Acadiana region is one big effort that we plan to be involved in. And we started doing some pilot analysis on these ends. We already established a pilot site for sensors, actually, in the Moncas Park. If you go there, you'll find a few sensors that we already put there to test out technology and so forth. Mm-hmm. And we also have a couple projects on them from federal agencies, like from NOAA and Sea Grant, to look at modeling and water conservation, water management. We have a project funded by the Sea Grant and also by the National Water Center to look at how to connect regional efforts with national scale efforts.
Are there good models for this kind of thing for hydrology over a region like this that would be adaptable to Acadiana and our particular issues?
Sure. I think that the technology is there. We have there are so many models. The question is more what's the right fit? And so when you go back to the main issues that we have, we're flat. You have concentrated development. You have tides. You have all of these things going on, water spilling over from one community to the other. And so you just have to pick the right model. So the tools are really there. It's a matter of, how do we integrate them with what we're trying to do? So.
Yeah, we do have a focus on doing this in Acadiana, on building this technology in Acadiana rather than in Baton Rouge from a statewide perspective, because it needs to be applicable to our region. The watershed you mentioned earlier, the Meat and the other watersheds on the other side of the basin, they have a different topography. They have different issues. And so we really want to go very intensely into our own issues and try to manage them together.
Is this the issue of the future? I know as the Acadiana Planning Commission, you probably have some other issues as well, but is this maybe the most consequential looking forward for this region?
I think it very well could be. Yeah, I mean, we what we do is one of the other things we do is transportation, and we've actually modeled a lot of our processes in this watershed effort after what we do in transportation. Federal Highways has that pretty laid out, and so it allowed us to really put processes in place, do project selection, and really collaborate well together.
Now, somebody had told me that there's maybe an upside to all this water planning, that somehow we could replenish our aquifer. Is that true?
Yes. Actually, we have a current project that looks at this issue. So we're trying to look at the flood from, a resource rather than a disaster or a hazard, So there are technologies for capturing the flood water during high events and treating it, because some of that water is not really clean, and maybe pumping it to the aquifer. And the Chico Aquifer is the site of our study that we are trying to look at.
The aquifer is about 400 feet down, is that right?
Right. It's one of the most depleted aquifers in the state and in the region, actually, because of farming and agriculture and so forth. So we are hoping that we can harness the power of floods and store that water.
So somehow we could take all these floods and all this excess water that we're complaining about and pump it back into
that's the
aquifer.
That's the concept. It's a lot more complicated than that, but that's the concept, yes. That's the concept. They call it aquifer storage and recovery. So you store it during high waters, and then you recover it during droughts.
Well, that would certainly be nice. Go ahead, Robert.
I was also going to say, I think we have an opportunity as well with the water quality issues that we have, the surface water quality of the Vermilion Tesh. We were cut off from the Atchafalaya system. And so now with, big projects coming up, I think we have an opportunity as a region to incorporate the environmental side with these projects so that we can perhaps address some of the issues that, the Tesh Vermilion Freshwater District, Bayou Vermilion, what they've been working so hard to address over the years.
Well, that would certainly be nice if we could improve the overall purity of our water in this region. That'd be great, as well as planning. We've been talking today with Dr. Imad Habib, Monique Boulay, and Dr. Robert Miller about flood control in Acadiana and hydrology. Thanks for joining us today and talking about this pressing issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Hi, this is Glenn Fields. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Over the Map, a brand new radio show Thursday nights at 10 p.m. We're going to listen to all kinds of weird stuff, exotica, Hawaiian music, soul music, jazz, anything. It's going to be all over the map. Who knows what's going to happen? So join me Thursdays at 10 p.m. right here on KRVS.
Tune to KRVS 88.7 FM. Thursday nights at 11 p.m. for the Minor Chord. Discover production techniques, effects, instruments, and the players who use them.
This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.